So, at that note, let's roll, and people will get into it a little bit more towards this year. Good afternoon, everyone. Hello. Just going through the faces to see who's here. Who haven't they said hello yet? Hello, Monty. Hello, Shoshana. Hello, Sid, Ricky, David. Hello, Bonnie. Oh, David. That was it. It's all David. Hello, Jeanette. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the third and last class of Introduction to Talmud, basic introduction to Talmud. This is our third class, and we've been through, really, I think, a very informative, informative series. I want to thank again, because now it's the third class. I want to thank again Joseph and Ruth Rudner for sponsoring the series, the three of the classes. Thank you very much. We really, really, really much appreciate it. I'm very sorry to see it end also. And at that note, I will tell you all, I will explain a little bit towards the end of this class, that I'm working on a new series on Monday at the same time, on 2 p.m. We're going to do parents and children issues in the book of Genesis. We're going to do something a little bit different than our Talmud class, and Bezrat Hashem, it's not going to start next week, it's going to start a little bit, I think a week afterwards. I will send flyer and information, Zoom info, everything would be good. And I look forward to learning with you more. So at that note, let's wrap a little bit what we did in the last two classes of our series of Introduction to Talmud. At the first class, we gave an introduction to the Oral Torah. We asked, what is this system of the Oral Torah? What's the importance of the Oral Torah? We said that Moshe Rabbeinu Moses received two Torot, two laws system on Mount Sinai. The first one is the written Torah, which we call the five books of Moses, and the Halachot that derive, the Jewish law that derives from this book. And in addition, he received on Mount Sinai the Oral Torah, which is the system, an oral system, which was not written down. And this system explained and expanded the questions and the halachot that rise up from the written Torah, which were not explained in the written Torah itself. We said that the Oral Torah was not being given to be written down. There is an halacha, a Jewish law, that says there is no one is allowed to write down the Oral Torah, and no one is allowed to teach orally the written Torah. And we know, we spoke about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. We went through the timeline, this timeline of the Jewish people. We went through everything that happened until the Second Temple. We said that at the Second Temple, something big happened in Jewish history. We said that for the first time, there was no prophets. Prophecy ended at the Second Temple period. And we started and we moved from being a nation of prophets, of prophecies, to be a nation of rabbis. The concept of a rabbi, of a sage, the concept of halakha questions, of books, was not there, didn't exist before the destruction of the Second Temple and before the ending, we would call that, of the prophecy. Then we said that the moment we lost prophecy, then something happened. People from different backgrounds, from different families, started to ask, wait, so what should we do? We have a question regarding our Jewish life. How should we act? What is the Jewish law? What is the halacha? We don't have a prophet that we can ask him, and he can just ask God, and God will answer. And what happened was different traditions and different practices started to evolve in the Jewish world, and all the way until Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and this we spoke about last week, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, which was the last one, the last generation of what we call the Tanaim. And I remind you that the Tanaim are the rabbis, the sages of the period of the Mishnah. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi said, I have, for the first time in history, a claim, an argument, that means that I need to write down the Oral Torah. Why did he say that? Because he saw that people started to diverge. He saw that Judaism as a whole started to become, to diverse into little groups, different traditions, different practices. And he said, if I'm not going to write down now one whole complete codex of Jewish law, Judaism will not survive. It will just, what we're going to happen to Judaism is what happened to any other religion, to a lot of other cultures. It will just be expanded to different, will diverse to different branches, to different groups, and will assimilate wherever they're going to be. So he wrote down, he said, now I need to act for God. He quoted this passage, this verse from Psalms, from the Tehillim, and he wrote down the project of what we called the Mishnah. We said, if you remember, that the Mishnah is divided into six different sections. If you can see on your sources, we went through this page last week of those different, this colorful table. Every part of the, every section in this table represent an order, a volume, or a section, depending how you want to call it, of the Mishnah. We said that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wrote down or edited all the different opinions about everything that is out there in Jewish law. From festivals, to Shabbos, to sacrifices, to fasting, to what happens for Shemitah, for example, in the land of Israel. What about wedding, divorce law, all the different things that are there in Judaism, end to end, back to back, he wrote down into this codex, this very long codex called the Mishnah. And the Mishnah is the first form of the oral Torah that was written down. We also said that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi did not all the time decided which and what opinion would be the correct one. We said that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi a lot of times just decided to leave the opinions as they are and to write down in the Mishnah the different opinions. So for example, if we talk about Hanukkah candle, we said there are different opinions. There is the opinion of Beit Hillel, one, the school of the sage called Hillel, and there is a school, another opinion of the school of Shammai, this sage called, this rabbi called Shammai, and they both said different things. While Hillel, the school of Hillel said, we need to light up and to add every night another candle until we get to 8 candles on the 8th day. The school of Shammai said, no, according to our tradition, according to our understanding of the Jewish law, you need to start on the first night of Hanukkah with 8 candles on your menorah and deduct every and each night one candle until you get to the 8th night with one candle lit up in your menorah. We said that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi for a lot of times just preserved the different opinions and wrote them down, and a lot of times he did not decide what would be the correct answer or the correct halacha from the different opinions that he wrote down. Sometimes he did, but a lot of times, in many cases, he did not. Another thing that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi did, and the generations afterwards had to understand why he did it, is to include some sources and some laws into the Mishnah, but some laws and some traditions and some practices to exclude. He decided by himself what would get into the Mishnah, what would be included, and what would stay out, what would be excluded. And the generations afterwards had to question themselves, why exactly did Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi leave all those sources excluded from the codex of the Mishnah? What about them? There's different traditions for different people, and they didn't find their traditions in the Mishnah. So they had to go out to what is called the Braitot, which are the external sources of the Mishnah. And the Talmud, which we're going to discuss finally today, is where all those rabbis, after Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, sat down in their yeshivot, in their Torah academies in Babylon, and discussed all the different questions that they had on the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. In other words, I'm going to mute everyone. In other words, oops, if you can just mute yourself, I'm sorry, I don't think I muted. In other words, thank you. In other words, we said that if Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi planned in his mind, in his vision, was to write down one codex of laws one halachic law book that everyone can refer to when they have a question. He just actually expanded the more confusion and questions in the Jewish world, and the Talmud would rise up from the Mishnah, and the Talmud includes all the different discussions and the questions on the Mishnah. This is what we did so far in our series. And at that note, let's open the Talmud. You know, when I learned to drive in Israel, it's not like here in Canada. I think here it's different, or maybe it's only in the States where the father teaches the son. In Israel, you need to go to a driving school, and you need to learn with a teacher, which is very expensive, I have to tell you, very, very expensive. And I think I was around 16 years old, something like that. And on my first class, I lived in an apartment, I went down to meet with the teacher, the driving teacher. And I saw the car, I got into the car, the first lesson. He told me, this is the wheel, this is the buttons, this is the pedal of the gas, this is the brakes, and this is the handbrake, and good luck, drive. I had never got into a car before. He took me and I had to drive all the way to the highway. Baruch Hashem, thanks God, I'm safe and sound. Everything is fine. But he told me that the best way to learn something is to dive deep into it. Now, I'm not recommending that for driving lessons. I do recommend that for Talmud. So at that note, let's dive into the Talmud and we'll explain what the Talmud is and how is it formed. We have those pages of you. I see a question from Monty. All right, I'll refer to this question later. All right, Monty, please, if I don't refer to that, please ask that again.
I got a different one.
You got it? They're different. Yeah, there's several ones. There is this one, and there is this one.
That's the one I got.
Yeah, no problem. There's the same one. I think I might also share the screen, and then we can go through that, because I think on that thing, it would be good to share the screen. Let's do that. I think it's worth it in that thing to share the screen. Anyway, you have here those pages. This is a copy of the Talmud. Oh, by the way, we talked about, and we will talk about today a little bit more, that there is two kinds of Talmud. There is the Babylonian Talmud, which this is a copy of it, of the Babylonian Talmud, and there is the Israeli Talmud, or in Hebrew, Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud. Now we said that the Israeli one, first of all, is earlier than the Babylonian one, almost 100 years earlier than the Babylonian one, and we said that it's called the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Babylon, not because it was written down in Jerusalem, it was written down in Tiberias, up north, near on the Sea of Kinneret, but they called it Jerusalem to honor Jerusalem as the city of the Jews, as the capital, also back then, of the Jewish people. So, you can see this page of the Talmud. All right, everyone has it? Or do you want me to share the screen anyway? Okay, I see you have it. Anyway, okay. If not, I will send it again on the chat. Here is the link. You can open it. Here you go. And we'll go step by step. I will try to do it slowly, all right? So if it's too fast, please stop me. I will try to slow down. We will go step by step and try to understand what is every and each cube in this very special looking page. That there is no other book that was printed in that way with those pages, all right? So, what do we see in this page? First of all, I want you to see the first top title of the page. I see that some people want me to share the screen, so I think I'll do that. So give me a second, please. If you cannot open it, it can be fine if you can open it there. I sent the link to your chat. Here you go. Okay, let's share the screen. And we will see everything now all together, so you don't have to take the page for you. Here we go. One second. Here it is. All right. Please let me know you can see my browser. Everything is good. You can see it. Very good. All right. We need this. I'm going to open this one. All right. So, what do we see here? Everyone see it? Please nod in your head so I can know you're with me. Very good. All right. So, the first part of the daf of the Talmud, we call it the daf. Daf in Hebrew is a page. All right? The first part of a Talmud page would be this line. This line, the top of the page, where it says in Hebrew, Haro'eh, and in the middle, Perek Chi'i, and Brachot. This is a title. Every page in the Talmud has a title to it. On the very right side, it starts here, on the very right side, we have a letter. Now, the letter represents the number of the page. The number is in Hebrew letters, all right? So, for example, the number Lamed represents 30. The number Mem represents 40. The number Lamed Aleph, Lamed and Aleph, represents 31. All right? It's called Gematria. Called Gematria. That's the word in English. Excuse me for that. And the dots that are next to the page, to the number, to the letter that represents the number of the page, explains if this page is side A or side B. And what do I mean by side A or side B? Now, we know in our head when we read books, we have different pages. It's not as complicated. Page 1, then page 2, then page 3, right? But in the Talmud, it doesn't work in the same way. In the Talmud, a page is two sides together. Now I have here, imagine this is a book. A page would be this side of the page and this side of the page. In other words, this would be, let's say, page 30A, and the other side of the page would be page 30B. And in the Talmud, if I have two dots next to the letter, this means I'm on side B. And if I have only one dot next to the letter, this means I'm on side A. So for example, here that I have Samech with two dots, that means I'm in 60, because Samech is 60, and I am on 60, on page 60, side B. Page before that would be 60, side A. Are we good with that? Please nod in your head so I can know that you're all with me. Very good, because it's a little bit of it's a little bit complicated, but I can repeat everything again if we all feel like we need to. Now, what do we have in the middle of the title? In the middle of the title, we have the title, first of all, of the chapter. Every volume in the Talmud is divided into different chapters, like any other book that we know, any other informative book that we have. There's different chapter. The name of the chapter is usually the first word of the page. All right? If the first word of the chapter, excuse me, is usually the first, usually would be the name of the chapter. For example, we know that from the weekly Torah portion, right? That the name of the Torah portion is one of the first words that appear in the weekly portion, in the Torah itself. At the middle, we have the number of the chapter. So, Perek Chi'i, Perek in Hebrew, is chapter. And Chi'i is the ninth chapter. So, the ninth chapter in this Talmud, the name of the chapter is Haro'eh. That's the name of it, Haro'eh, the one who sees. That's how it's called. And the last one that we have here on the title is the name of the tractate. If you remember last week, I introduced the concept of a tractate. A tractate is a volume. In Hebrew, it's called Masechet. A tractate is one of the volumes of the Talmud that usually discuss one tractate of the Mishnah. So in that case, the tractate name is Brachot. This is the first line of the Talmud page. How are we doing so far? Good? Very good. That's always, this is a very informative class. Now, what do we have here? First of all, we need to acknowledge that there is no other book in the world that is being published that way. Not only that, this way of printing all right, of printing a page of a story or that is called, even in the, not in the Jewish world, it's called the Talmudic way of printing. All right, why? Because this is unique only for the Talmud. So what do we have here? First of all, we have at the middle, let's start from the middle. At the middle of the page, all the way until down, we have the Talmud text itself. When people read or learn Talmud, they only read the middle. The Talmud is only the middle of the page. Whatever there is in both sides, it's not the Talmud. We'll talk about what there is on the different sides in a minute. But the Talmud is important to understand. It's only the middle part of the page. Now, what do we have on both sides? So, on one side, we have commentary from what we know from, the famous commentator called Rashi. Rashi, we know him also for commentating the Torah, right? In our five books of Moses and in the Nevi'im, we know there is Rashi, and Rashi explains the Torah. Also, he has almost an entire commentaries. He did not manage to finish everything because he passed away. He tried to do the most that he can. But he has a lot of explanations on the Talmud, and this appears on the side, one of the sides of the page. When he passed away, then his grandson, the Rashbam, that's his name, he continued his work. And he completed for all the other tractates, whatever he did. There is a saying, by the way, that Rashi, when he saw what his grandson is able to do and his skills, he said, "Wow, if I would have known how good you are in commentating the Gemara, I would give you to do everything, and now I would do it like you are." Which is very interesting to see what changes would the grandson do on his grandfather, but we'll leave it to a different discussion. So here, on one hand of the page, we have Rashi. Rashi would be this. You can see it? You see my mouse going through the page? This little thing here is Rashi. How do we know it's Rashi? Because Rashi starts with bold little font. You see? The Rashi, every in each Rashi, starts with small, bold font. For example, this, or this, or this. You see, this is Rashi. Now, the Rashi is being written in a special font. This font is called a special script. This font, those letters are called the Rashi script. They're very special, they're only for Rashi. No, Rashi didn't write in the Rashi script, but it is being named after him because it's a much quicker way to write down in Hebrew. It's still Hebrew, they're still Hebrew letters, but it's a special way of writing Hebrew with whenever in each letter looks different than what we used to know as how Hebrew letters looks like. It is one of the difficult things to do is to learn Rashi. Why? Because you need to be able to read Rashi's font, Rashi's script. And in Israel, in the religious education system, you learn to read the Rashi script somewhere around grade 4, grade 5. All right? In elementary school, you already start to learn how to read Rashi's script. But it's very difficult when you're more adult to read Rashi. But thanks God, we have also Rashi in regular fonts, in different websites. We have Rashi translated into English. Almost everything is translated today into English, and we can find everything online. But if we open a hardcore Talmud book, then we will find Rashi in this font. Rashi goes all the way until here. On the other side of the page, we have what is called the Tosfot. Tosfot is not one rabbi like Rashi was, but rather they are a bunch of rabbis throughout different generations, mostly in Europe, but not only, who had questions on the Talmud. Now, while Rashi would explain the Talmud, Tosfot would ask questions on the Talmud, and sometimes also on Rashi himself. If they don't understand something, if they don't understand the concept, if they don't understand the sentence, if it appears in the Talmud, they will ask it. If they don't understand a sentence that Rashi writes down, they will ask it. And most of the time, they will also provide a solution. Now I see there is a question here. Please point to the Tosfot right away. So how do you know what the Tosfot is? that Tosfot starts not like Rashi with small font of Rashi font, but rather with regular Hebrew letters. You see it? This is Tosfot. All this here, the right side of the page. All this. You see my mouse? This is Tosfot. Tosfot starts with a bigger font and in regular Hebrew script. The Tosfot itself, the content of those Tosfot is written in Rashi script. But the title of what they're saying is in Hebrew script, in Hebrew letters. That builds up the Talmud. At the middle, we have the Talmud. On the left here, in that case, we have Rashi. On the right side, we have Tosfot. Now, you don't need to learn Rashi and Tosfot. Rashi and Tosfot are there only for helping us. Rashi is there to explain things that are difficult for us. Alright? And Tosfot, Claudia, thank you. I will give you in a second to ask a question. And Tosfot is there to enrich our learning with questions, challenging things. And sometimes if something is difficult to us when we learn the Talmud, maybe Tosfot will ask this question as well and will answer it. But usually if you only want to learn Talmud, you can learn only the Talmud itself. In a minute, we'll explain why it's difficult. But it's important to understand, before we finish this section, that Rashi, when he wrote down his commentary on the Talmud, he didn't have Rashi. My Moriv Rabbi David Bingman used to say, Rashi didn't have Rashi. Rashi wrote down his commentary without anyone doing it before him. Right? So when we learn Talmud with Rashi, we need to understand that Rashi's explanation is Rashi's explanation. It's not the objective explanation of the Talmud. It's important to understand that. Everywhere we read about commentators on different books, on different halachic, Jewish books, Jewish texts, like the Talmud, like the Torah, if we learn the commentators on the text itself, we need to understand and to acknowledge that this is according to their reading and not objectively as the text really says. Yes, Claudette. Claudette, you're muted. Okay.
I just need to clarify something.
Yes.
You said the middle is the Talmud,
right?
So what is in the middle is what came out of the Mishnah?
That's why I explained in a minute. Thank you for asking. This is not what came out from the Mishnah. This is quotes off the discussion in their academy, in their academies, in their schools of learning themselves. All right, we'll dive into it in a second. Thank you for asking that.
Thank you
for asking. Any more questions before we move forward? Yes, Miriam.
Why do we need the Rashi script? Why did they change the script that he wrote in and changed it to a different script?
So it's a very, very good question. There's different answers for that. The most popular one, the most famous answer that I know of, is when usually, and we'll talk about it, the Talmud, before the printer was invented, the Talmud would be written down manually with manuscripts, right? And to write down Rashi on the page would take a lot of time. So they used to write down Hebrew in letters that are much faster to write them down. And this came to be the Rashi script that we know today. All right? That answers the question? Thank you. Yes, Ricky.
Yeah. Rabbi?
Yes.
Could you expand a little bit on what you answered to Claudette? I'm not sure I understood the question, but I didn't understand your answer.
Yeah, I will. I didn't answer her question. I said I will dive into her question in a minute.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any more questions before we continue? All right. Very good. So, we have in the middle the Talmud, and in both sides we have Rashi on the left side here and Tosfot on the right side. By the way, I don't want to confuse you, but we are on side B. Remember we said that every page has two sides. We are now on side B. If we would turn the page to side number A, the position of Rashi and Tosfot would switch. All right? If we are on side B, then Tosfot would be on the right side of the page, and Rashi would be on the left side of the page. But if we are now learning a page that is on side A, then Rashi would apparently be on the right side now of the page, while Tosfot would be on the left side of the page. All right, it's confusing, I know, and I'll explain in a minute why, what happened, and how come the Talmud looks like it looks right now. All right, but what is the middle, the core of the Talmudic page? What is everything that is written down here? So, first of all, we have no one answer for that. Why not? Because, you know, if they would have a recorder, a tape, like we have today, we would understand that someone recorded everything that went on in the Talmud, in their schools, and afterwards he wrote down everything that he heard, down into a book, and published it out. But this was not the case. They did not record themselves. They could not record themselves. So what happened? How come we have these core discussions of Talmud? So first of all, what is the Talmud text? The Talmud text is just constant discussions. Constant discussions. It's very different than any other book we have. It's not like the Mishnah, which is list of Jewish laws. It's not like Harry Potter, which is a novel. It's a discussion between two or more rabbis. The entire Talmud is one constant discussion, which is very, very difficult to learn. Why is it very difficult to learn? Because it looks like it's one discussion, but actually beneath it, underneath it, it hides hundreds of years of generations that apparently, if we learn the Talmud, sounds like they speak together in the same room. But they never saw each other and they never lived with each other in the same generation. But after a very massive work of editing the Talmud, it came up to what we have today, which sounds like a discussion between 2, 3, 4, 5 rabbis. But a lot of times those rabbis were never met each other, were never in the same room. And a lot of times there is hundreds of years sometimes, or decades, that separates between them and the generations. Now, another thing that makes the Talmud difficult for learning is the fact that it's in Aramaic. It's not in Hebrew. It's written in Hebrew script, but the words are not Hebrew. They are Aramaic. Now, we talked about last week, Aramaic is a language that was spoken in Babylon back then. There's still people who speak a little bit different Aramaic, but all the way today in northern Syria. It's still a language that is being spoken, not a lot, and apparently different. But they could speak this language with Hebrew fonts, with Hebrew script. All right? And the third thing that, one second, Ricky. And the third thing that makes this Talmud very difficult for learning is the fact that it has zero punctuation. No punctuation at all.
It's called stream of consciousness in literature.
Stream of consciousness in literature. Thank you very much, Ricky. And I have here also Professor Paul. There is some literature personnel in this class, so they can acknowledge that. It's very difficult. The moment you start reading the text, you don't know where to stop. You don't know where to pause. It's very difficult. If you have
come... What are the little letters? Do they show different sentences?
No. We'll talk about the little letters in a moment. It doesn't help us to understand the text better. Let's say it like that. Yes, we know who the editor and the editors were. We'll explain that in a minute. Thank you for this for the person who asked that. So because of those three reasons, it's very difficult to learn Talmud. And the pity is that for generations, a lot of people, they just avoided from opening this wonderful, wonderful book because of its complexity, because it was very, very difficult. So what I'm trying to do here in this series is just to give a brief explanation of what exactly do we have in front of our eyes. Because sometimes when you understand what is the structure of the book you're reading, it will be easier for you to open it and try to learn it. Now, I want to tell you, you don't need to know Hebrew. And you don't need to know Aramaic. Today, thanks God, we have translations for everything. Now, that's right. You see, Ricky and Professor Paul, you're going to say, you know what? It's not Miriam. You're going to say it's not the same when you learn translation. Then you learn the original language. I agree with you. But it's the best we have today. And everyone can just open the Talmud and learn it. They don't need any prior knowledge, no halachic knowledge, no Jewish knowledge, no Hebrew, and no Aramaic. You just need passion and good willing, and you'll be able. It will be challenging, but everyone is able to open the Talmud and to learn it. Yes, Ricky?
Okay, so two questions. How many volumes is the Talmud?
Oh, I don't remember exactly. I think 37 or 27, something like that. Something like that.
Another question is about including Rashi. I can see that at the beginning, Rashi was the commentator. No one has ever thought of replacing him. I see that there are other commentators on the side, but Rashi is still the commentator.
Rashi is still the commentator for two reasons. First of all, no one has ever done the same thing as he did. Until our generation, and we'll talk about it, there is Art Scroll edition and Steinsaltz edition, which we'll talk about it in a minute. But until our generation, no one has ever done such a huge project like him and his grandson. So first of all, this is why. And second of all, we have, and this is a wider, broader discussion, we have a fundamental rule in Judaism that the earlier the generation is, then the more, the more important it is in order for us to understand the text. In other words, the fact that Rashi lived in the 10th, 11th century in France makes him more valid to decide what is the explanation of the text than someone who lives in the 21st century. Now, maybe it doesn't make sense, it's a very interesting thing to say that, and why? It's for a broader discussion that, unfortunately, I cannot expand here. All right? Yes, Miriam?
Well, first of all, I'm overwhelmed. I'll have to read all my notes again. A very down-to-earth question.
Yes.
There was no printing press at that time.
Oh, thank you.
What did they write on? And did they have to copy all 36 volumes many, many, many times so people can get to them? It seems like an impossible task.
Thank you for asking. So at that note, let's go a little bit back in history. All right, I'm stopping the sharing and we'll make a short history class. So what happened? How did the Talmud get to this page that we have today? First of all, we need to understand that after the generation of the Amoraim, if you remember, we said that Amoraim were the rabbis who lived in Babylon after the Mishnah. They were Amoraim in Israel, they wore the Israeli Talmud, and they were Amoraim in Babylon, and they wrote the Babylonian Talmud. If you remember, the first class, you have it, I shared with you this map of ancient Babylon with different cities. Were in different names of Amoraim, of the Talmudic rabbis, and where did they live? In Babylon. You can look at that later. So what happened? Yes, first of all, we don't know everything. Because this text is very ancient, we have some assumptions. We have some studies and researchers that are still being done on the Talmud that we have, but we don't know exactly what happened in this area because we don't have a lot of historical evidences. What do we do know? We have today, and thanks a lot of it would be thanks to the Cairo Geniza, and we'll talk about it in a minute, we have a lot of manuscripts of the Talmud from the Middle Ages, from 12th, 13th, 14th century, and we have them, they were written down before the printer was invented. Now, you would assume, okay, so if we have them, that's very good. The problem is that if we compare and contrast those different manuscripts, we find differences. All right? There are differences between the manuscripts. It's not every manuscript, in general, they're the same. In, I would say 95% of them, it's the same. But there are those 5% where they differ. And now the question is, all right, so according to which manuscripts should we learn? Which manuscript is the more correct? So the earlier the manuscript is, the more correct it is. If one manuscript says something and we know it was written down in the 10th century, but a manuscript from the 13th century doesn't have a word or excludes one of the words that appears in the 10th century manuscript, then we know that the 10th century manuscript is more correct, right, than that. But this is new studies. All those studies of manuscripts of the Talmud are new. New, I'm talking about the last 100 years, all right? Until then, and until the invention of the print, people would learn the Talmud. Now, there was a problem. The problem was that if you didn't have enough money, and if you were not learned enough, you didn't open the Talmud. Because in order to learn the Talmud, you need to pay for someone to copy it down for you. So we will generate a copy. And this cost a lot of money, folks. It cost a lot of money. And people could not afford it to themselves. Not only that, even if someone could afford himself to buy, to pay for someone to copy a manuscript of the Talmud, he needs to know how to learn it. He needs to understand the Aramaic. Now, very few people, we need to understand that, very few people throughout the ages, throughout the generations, learned Talmud. Most of the Jewish world didn't learn the Talmud until the printer. Alright? We need to understand that. The moment the printer was invented, and we talk about who printed the first Talmud page, but the moment the printer was invented and the Talmud page was printed, for the first time people could just buy a copy. And it was much cheaper. And people could just walk into a store or pay for a printer. It was much cheaper than copying it manually. And people could just buy a copy and learn the Talmud. So something happened. You know, it's amazing. It's not only in Talmud. It's also in the Torah, in what we call Mikraot Gdolot, which is the books of the Torah that we have in our homes. It's also for the Bible. It's also for secular literature, for a lot of stuff. The moment the printer was invented, then people didn't need to write down in their hands the books themselves. They started to read and to learn more. And the same thing happened for the Talmud. 1 second, Susan, if that's fine, I'll just finish what I'm trying to say. And in the 15th century, there was a very famous printer person. Maybe you heard of him. He wasn't Jewish, he was Christian. His name was Daniel Bomber. Maybe you heard of his name, maybe not. He's very, very important person. Why? Because he is the first one to print down the Talmud. He's not Jew. He's not Jewish. We need to understand that the situation back there in Italy, we're talking about Venice. Excuse me? Okay, we're talking about Venice, Italy, in the 15th century. For Jews, it was very difficult back then because of anti-Semitism. All right, they were not allowed to work in printers. They weren't allowed to do that. And not only that, every print that would be printed in the would-be print had to have the approval, the acceptance of the Pope. All right. And Daniel Bomber had money, he had the will, and he said, "Wow, there is a huge market of Jews who wants to have books. Let me get into this market and I will publish for them all the books that they need." He received his acceptance, his approval from the Pope. All right, he lived in Venice and he said, "I'm starting to print down." He didn't print only the Talmud, but the Talmud would be one of the most important things that he printed. And he, believe it or not, because of the way he thought the Talmud page should look like, this Christian printer person, because of him, this is all the way until today, how the page of the Talmud looks like. It was not a rabbi who decided it would look like that. It wasn't given to Moshe from Mount Sinai. It's because this printer person, a Christian printer person, decided to print the Talmud page as it is today. All right? Now you will ask, so why do we keep learning in that same shape? Let's change the shape of the page. Why do we learn it in the same way? So first of all, you're right. Not everyone learns it in the same way. All right? You can just, you have it in your sources also. I have a lot of sources for you just to look at. This is a translation of the Talmud. All right? We have this. It's just a sugya, an issue from the Talmud, just for you to try, not something very, very difficult, something about finding a lost. It's in English and it's not in the way of the Talmud page. Just for you to see that we can learn it in different ways. But the classic shape of the page, which in Hebrew is called Surat Hadaf, the Surat Hadaf, the shape of the page, is something that we still learn in for generations because our parents learned like that and their grandparents learned like that and their grandparents. And there is value in learning the Talmud in the way it is like now. If Rashi was able to do that, we are able to do that also. All right? And we learn the Talmud in that way because that's how they printed it. All right? Now, before I get into questions, yes, I got a question from someone regarding the different things that are not Rashi and Tosfot surrounding the page. So, what are they? So, 30 years after Daniel Bomber has printed the Talmud for the first time, we're talking again about the 15th century in Italy. All right? 15th century. So, 30 years afterwards, another Christian printer person, his name was Marco Antonio. Excuse me for my Italian. His name was Marco Antonio. And this Marco Antonio, he decided to add more to the page, not only Rashi and not only Tosfot, and he was a good friend of an Italian rabbi. This rabbi, a very, very, very smart rabbi, this rabbi's name was Rabbi Yehoshua Boaz. All right? Rabbi Yehoshua Boaz. And Rabbi Yehoshua Boaz, his friend, he wrote down three books. Three books, very important books. The first book is called Torah Or. Torah Or, what is this book? This book is references. Every time there is a verse, a quote of a verse in the Talmud, in all around the Talmud, every time there is a quotation of a verse from the Bible, this Rabbi Yehoshua Boaz would refer to the place in the Bible where this verse comes from. For example, if there is a quotation from the book of Daniel in the Talmud, he would write down next to the verse what chapter and what verse, number of verse, is this pasuk, is this verse from the book of Daniel. He did it for every and each verse throughout the entire Talmud. Just think of this amazing project of going through every and each quotation in the Talmud. Now you would think, well, this is amazing. So I will tell you, it's not the only thing that this rabbi did. Rabbi Yehoshua Boaz did another thing. Every time there was a discussion in the Talmud that appears again in a different place, in a different volume, in a different tractate in the Talmud, sometimes it happens because of the editing. We have similarity of different discussions appears in many places. Then this Rabbi Yehoshua Boaz wrote down a book that refers, points, every niche discussion, where is the similar discussion in what other tractate. Now, he didn't have computers. We're talking about the 15th century. He did everything with his mind, everything with his brain. He just memorized the entire Talmud and could tell you, oh, this discussion or this saying of that rabbi appears in a very different tractate in page like that and like that, in line number 25. So not only the verses he did, the references, and not only references to similar discussions, he wrote down a third book. And that book is called Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. You don't need to remember it. Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. And this book, he wrote down, the same Rabbi Yehoshua Boaz, every time there was an halachic discussion in the Talmud, he would refer to the bottom line of halacha as it was known in his generation. If there was a discussion regarding Shabbos, what you can do or not do on Shabbos, he would write down a star, small star next to the discussion, and would say, you can find the bottom line of the discussion, the halacha, in the book of Maimonides, chapter 5, page 6. Those three books, projects that you would not even understand how someone can write them down without a computer. He wrote the three of them, those three books, and he was a good friend of this Marco Antonio. And Marco Antonio, this Italian Christian printer person, he said, you know what, I'm going to add it to my, I want to print also the Talmud, and I want to add your three books to the Talmud. So those are the three things that surround the Talmud page all the way until today. And we still learn them and we still use them. Yes, questions. Yes, Claudette.
Yes. Two questions. I have the tractate Sanhedrin, right?
The tractate what? I don't see. Sanhedrin. Yes.
Right. When I open it, I know what is the Talmud. I know what is Rashi. I know what is Torah. But on the opposite side, there is English. Is that English interpreting all of what is here?
Yes. I will talk about it in a minute. This is the English translation. We said that no one did what Rashi did all the way until our generation. Where two huge projects were formed. The first one is the Art Scroll project, which is, this is what you have, which is in English. And the other one in Israel is the Steinsaltz. After Rabbi Adin Evan Israel Steinsaltz, Zichron Livracha, he wrote down, he was a rabbi in Israel, he was a Rosh Hashiva. And he was a religious Zionist rabbi, and he wrote down his own commentary on the Talmud, just translated the entire Talmud from Aramaic to Hebrew with his explanations. We'll get it in a minute, in a second. All right? Yes, Susan.
First of all, when you've been explaining what the Talmud is, isn't every Talmud based first on a Mishnah? It is not just written.
You're right. You're right.
And without the Mishnah, you wouldn't have the Talmud.
You're right. We just said that the Talmud is the question that were right from the Mishnayot, from the Mishnah.
But the Mishnayot start each one.
Yeah, you're exactly. In the printer, exactly. In the manuscripts, not in everyone, but in some, most of the manuscripts, and later on in the print, they added a quotation of the Mishnah itself in the beginning of the discussion. You're right.
Also, the other thing is, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me, when they first brought the printing press, learning Gemara was an elitist thing. And wasn't there a lot of people who didn't want it because they were afraid if the masses learned it, they would not understand it?
It's a very wide question. As I said, it was very prestigious to own a Talmud and to learn it back then. Very, very, very prestigious for many reasons. Some say it's not for everyone. It's only for the learners, from the high educated people of our society. Some said it's supposed to be for everyone. Some didn't have the money. Some didn't know Aramaic. For many reasons, people avoided opening it or having it or learning it. And Baruch Hashem, thanks God, that in our generations we have so many ways to open the Talmud and to learn it that it's just right here. Just Google Talmud in English, you'll find many sources.
Any more? Of course, Sepharia.
And Sepharia, exactly, Sepharia. Exactly. Okay, before I get to the art scroll and Steindatz, just to explain, I owe you from last week an explanation. Why did the Babylonian Talmud succeeded and became more popular than the Israeli one? All right, what happened? So three reasons. First of all, the Babylonian one has many more discussions. It's much more broader. There's more volumes, physical volumes, more volumes that we have than the Israeli one. Why? Several answers for that. The main answer would be because what happened in Israel back then and the political, geographical situation, then a lot of copies never survived. Everything that happened back then, while in Babylon, we have a lot of Jews, not a lot today, but for many generations, we had a lot of Jews that still lived in Babylon. They still carried and they had different biblical debt. They had different volumes. That's reason number one. Reason number two why the Yerushalmi, the Israeli Talmud, is less learned than the Babylonian one is mainly because it's written in a very difficult language. If you think that Aramaic, Babylonian Aramaic, is difficult, try to read the Israeli Aramaic. It's very difficult, all right? It's very difficult. There's some words that no one understands what's going on and how it's going, and it's very, very, very difficult. And the third reason why it wasn't written, you know, there are four reasons. The third one, why it's less popular, less famous, I would say, than the Babylonian one, is because it's less edited. The Babylonian one was edited a lot after it was finished. What we have today is edits upon edits upon edits, so it's much more intuitive to read, to learn. It's much more easy. While the Israeli one never been through any edits. There were no editor to that book. So it's just, you know, a bunch of discussions and sentences, one above the other, and it's really difficult to learn it. And the fourth one would be because we were in exile. For all those years, we were in exile. A lot of the Israeli Babylonian is discussing Israeli-related issues. For example, Shemitah. For example, things regarding the working the fields and agriculture and the land. And it was not, it was not necessary to learn it in the exile in Europe and in North Africa and in Babylon and in America. They just didn't need to. So today in Israel, there are yeshivot and rabbis who learn more and more Yerushalmi. Even here in the Beit Midrash Zichron Dov, when I'm part of, we're trying to learn more and more Yerushalmi, the Israeli Talmud, along with the Babylonian one. And just to explain what do we have today regarding English and Hebrew translation, then Art Scroll, the publisher, has published years ago already, and they finished it. They have the entire set of the Talmud. This is what Claudette has shown us. They have the entire set of the Talmud with English translation to it. You have on one page the regular classic shape of the page, and the other page has, next to it, the mirror reflects it, English translation. It is all available online. Everything is available free online. Everything. There is Google Sepharia, Sepharia.org. You will find everything. There is English translation to everything. I will send it in the chat so you can find it afterwards. You can Google it if you want just to open it. It's called sefaria.org. Here you go, sefaria. Oh, sorry, there is a typo. Here, sefaria.org. You'll find everything there. Everything is translated. Hebrew, English, everything is there. Also, there is Rabbi Steinsaltz who did it. Rabbi Adin Heaven Israel Steinsaltz, he passed away last year. He had this huge, he tried to do what Rashi did back then to the Talmud, to the Torah. He tried to do it and he succeeded to do it as well. He has an entire commentary for the Talmud, an entire commentary for the five books of Moses. He has commentaries for other books as well. And he did the same thing for the Talmud with sometimes explanations and modern explanations and modern interpretations of the Talmud. It's there as well. So what I want just to before I give time for questions, because we ran out of time, just what I want you please to take from this series. First of all, thank you. I enjoyed it very, very, very much. It's always good to dive into introductions of stuff. Also, someone who learns 24/7. Let's give an example of Rabbi Turchina. Rabbi Turchina learns 24/7, and he's a learned man.
Can we have a fourth class?
Oh wow! I'll explain in a minute what we're going to have. Rabbi Turchina is a learned man. Even he told me that it's very good to dive into introductions sometimes. Even when you rush and you're into the content, sometimes we forget to take a pause, to stop for a second and to look, wait, what do we have in front of our eyes? What is it? What is this wonderful masterpiece of Talmud, of Mishnah, of Oral Torah that we have today that we can open and learn and discuss? It's not taken into granted, so thank you for this opportunity. And I really hope that you learned, you could just, you know, take something small from this series, whether it's how the Oral Torah was evolved, what is the Mishnah, what is the importance of the Mishnah, how does the page of the Talmud looks like. Maybe I gave you some, ideas if you want to learn Talmud, you want to start learning Talmud, please do. And you have my email. And you're more than welcome to ask, to share, to follow up. I would love to, you to, if you could just send more questions. If you're learning something, you have a question about the Talmud, about a topic, I'm here for you always. You have my email. Thank you very much for that. And I really, really enjoyed. And I really very much look forward to starting a new series, not next week, the week afterwards. We're going to send a flyer with explanations and information. Don't worry. We're going to do parents and children issues in the book of Genesis. Something very different, something I think fascinating, I think something very, very interesting. There is a lot of material in the book of Genesis regarding one's family and the situation inside the family. I'll try to offer with you a different reading to the book of Genesis, try to understand what are the messages that this book is trying to convey with all the stories, the very complicated stories that are being told about one and his family there. And something very different. And I hope I will see you all there. And I really, really thank you very, very much. It was my pleasure. Thank you very much, all of you. And I'm here for Chris for questions if you have. Thank you. Yeah, just go whoever wants to ask.
Is it possible to get a fourth lesson?
Is there a specific topic that you would like to have?
Just to expand what we've been talking.
Depends, because next week I think I can't. But I do think of doing maybe a part two series of Introduction to Talmud. Something that is more based into Halacha. It's still, you know, I'm digesting the idea. We'll see what comes up from it. But there is definitely many, many, many things to discuss. And Ricky, you and anyone else, if you have any questions or follow-up, please don't hesitate. Email me, and I will. If I'm not answering you right away, I will answer. I will follow up. I promise. The moment I get into it. Thank you very much.
Rabbi?
Yes, Monty.
So two questions I posted during the discussion. So number one, unless I misunderstood you, if the tradition is not to write down the oral Torah and not to learn orally the written Torah, why do we have the Mishnah and the Talmud at all?
So
why is it written down?
So this is a good question that I think we referred to in the first class when we said that when we lost prophecy, then something happened. And a lot of people had their own tradition. They could not just ask God what is the right rule or the right Jewish law to follow. And they just had their different tradition. The Jewish people diversed. They branched out to different smaller groups. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said, if we continue like that, we're going to disappear. The Jewish people is going to disappear. They're not going to continue. You're going to stop the continuation. And he said, we need to write it down. Even though it's forbidden to do it, I have to write it down so people will have one book to follow and they will know what halacha is.
Okay, and second question. So you talked about it being edited throughout the years. Do we know who the various editors were?
We know that Ravina and Ravashi, just two names of rabbis who lived towards the end of the Amoraim period, they are the one who started the editing of it. We don't know when it was finished. There are different ideas, different opinions, and different ways of learning. This is a question that belongs to, I would say, the academic world, which has researches and studies on the Talmud. They're much more into it than what I am right now. But we know there's differences throughout the generations. Some would say also to the Middle Ages. There were some added, some explained. It's there's no one answer for that. But we know it evolved. Today, it's untouched anymore. That's what I can tell you. No one is editing it today anymore.
Thank you so much for the answers. And thank you so much for this series.
Thank you very much, Monte. I really appreciate it. Yes. Yes, Linda.
There was a time, I believe, that the study of Talmud, women didn't engage in the study of Talmud, but their study was limited to studying Mishnah. Is that changed now, or it's still in certain circles?
Thanks God it has changed. Thanks God it has changed. It's difficult, not in every part of, in every, you know, every group in Judaism, and the situation in Israel is different than the situation here. But today, women have schools, special yeshivot, it's called midrashot, special Torah academies for women to learn to engage in the Talmud. There are some great women, female rabbis, who learn and teach the Talmud, both for men and women. We're still in this evolution, and we're in the beginning of it. In the past 20, 30 years, maybe 40 years, we're still in this evolution, revolution, depends how you want to call it. And I believe that in the coming 10, 20 years, it will just expand more and more and more.
Thank you very much. This was really a really interesting experience.
Thank you very much, Linda. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Yes, Susan. Susan, any question? If your hand is raised up. All right. Any question? I'm happy to answer. All right. Okay, you have my email. Thank you very much. Very, very, very much. And I hope to see you again in 2 weeks, and we will send information for a new series with a new topic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.